orders of our elected policymakers, and right now ours are telling us that the boy goes back. End of discussion. Even if it's going to ruin people's lives. The only correct response was, you're right. Their job was to steal secrets and in some cases carry out covert action missions at the behest of the president. She was a CIA case officer, not a case worker. If she wanted a career in child advocacy, she was in the wrong profession. But before she could follow up her question to cover her tracks, Bill had made his decision. I'm pulling you off this, Manning. You're too close to it, and it shows. The kid is going to Pakistan, and that's final. Aside from that, we don't need Garrett anymore. He served his purpose. Been a good asset. Now it's time to move on. A good asset? The term took her by surprise. Kim thought of Garrett as a colleague, not a CIA source. But the truth was, he had never volunteered. He'd worked for her out of dire necessity to protect his family, and more importantly, so that he could adopt Asadi. Suddenly, she felt like a predator, stalking a wounded animal that's trying to protect its young. Kim expelled a defeated breath, this time not caring what her boss thought. I just don't want to wreck anyone's life because we gain an operational advantage in South Asia. It's selfish. It's selfish not to do it. Bringing Zadran on board is a matter of national security, and you need to make sure that whatever you do is for the good of the country, not your own. She was winding up for a counter-argument when it hit her that the reason his words stung so deeply was because they were true. For the first time in her career, she was putting emotion over mission. But there was a part of her that felt the agency owed her one. Her dedication to the fight had left her empty and alone, a realization that left Kim so deflated that she no longer felt like battling her boss. She just consented with a nod. In all reality, there was no good option. If Kim took Asadi, Garrett would be devastated. And that was the irony. The only thing keeping a team of CIA ground branch operators from hunting him down and sending him to the forever hereafter was the mission. To save Garrett's life, she'd have to destroy him. 23. Asadi should have been nervous, maybe even a little afraid. But for some reason, he wasn't. With Butch and Garrett kicked off the ranch, it was up to him to keep the operation running, or at least make sure the horses were watered and fed. He knew he was making a bigger deal out of it all than it actually was, but his family was in need, and he wanted to prove his worth. Bridger dropped Asadi off at the barn before heading into town, leaving him to tend to the horses by himself. With a little time to kill before his uncle's return, he threw a saddle on Grizz and led him out to the corral. Part of him knew that Butch wouldn't approve him doing this alone, but another part was certain it would make the old man proud. Nothing thrilled Butch more than when Asadi did a job without having to be told. Working with the colt wasn't something that necessarily had to be done, but he didn't want to lose any progress and knew Butch would feel the exact same way. Asadi was opening the gate to the corral when he froze at a distinctive sound he'd come to know well. Before seeing the rattlesnake coiled against the fence post, Grizz must have sensed its presence. Asadi should have known by the sorrel's snorts and nervous bob of the head. Anticipating what was sure to come, Asadi tightened his grip and braced for the struggle. But before he could get a good grasp, the reins ripped across his palm as the colt reared and shuffled away. Asadi made a grab for the leather straps, but they were just out of reach. He tried again, just as Grizz turned from the corral and bolted into the pasture. Asadi's burning hand was nothing compared to the sting of his shame as the riderless horse trotted away. Not really knowing what to do, he looked down the road for Bridger, but there was no help in sight. Turning back to Grizz, he saw the jittery colt make a turn toward the mine, where growling machinery and rumbling trucks kicked up dust in their destructive wake. Asadi sprinted to Grizz, who was at least 50 yards away and moving further and further by the second. Blood pumping and fueled by fear, he at first felt as if he could run forever, but the blazing sun quickly took its toll. Slowing to a walk, Asadi took a more measured approach. The colt had stopped beside the tall fence built by the new company and seemed to have tired out. Asadi had not seen a fortress like it since the American Army base in Afghanistan. The glinting razor wire was stacked in three separate coils, one atop the other, forming an impenetrable barrier at least 6 feet high. Knowing that a sudden fright could leave Grizz entangled and wounded, Asadi's approach went from measured to glacial. He took a deep breath, raised his hand, and summoned a calm voice.
Come on, Grizz. Come on, boy.
After a silent plea to his mother in heaven for help, he called gently to his partner.
No worry. No worry. Please stop, Grizz.
The colt's ears perked, turned forward, and his head swung around in Asadi's direction. Grizz took a couple of shaky strides closer to the fence and then stopped and looked back. After a skittish lunge, he slid to a halt. The colt stood rigid for a moment, then let out a snort and took a couple of timid steps forward. Asadi kept an easy pace as he approached, moving steadily but cautiously, trying desperately to show enough confidence for them both. He kept his hand out, open and visible, rubbing the tips of his fingers like he was bringing a handful of pellets. Within a few yards of Grizz, Asadi eyed the razor wire behind the colt, shimmering like diamonds in the setting sun. Pretending they were in the safety of the corral, Asadi moved forward, his casual smile leading the way. He had just grasped Grizz's dangling reins when an engine roared from behind, and the colt's eyes widened in panic. He stiffened, jerked his head, and shuffled backward, his rump nearly touching the fence. With all his strength, Asadi held tight, his mind made up that he'd never let go, even if it meant being dragged into the razor wire along with Grizz. Digging his boot heels into the dirt, Asadi yanked the reins, but his strength was no match. A flick of the colt's neck in response to the truck's blasting horn launched him off his feet, and landing face first in the dusty ground. A death grip on the leather straps, Asadi held on as the colt scuttled backward, dragging him through the dirt and smashing over thorny bushes that scraped his forehead and cheeks. Barreling over a shrub, Asadi started to let loose just as Grizz stopped. He tightened his hold, scrambled to his feet, and slid his palm along the reins until he got a firm grasp on the bridle. A quick glance over the shoulder revealed the three uniformed men creeping up from behind. Only feet from the wire, Asadi began to panic as a terrified Grizz inched closer to the fence. It wasn't until Bridger drove up, flung open the door, and marched to his pursuers, spewing a slew of profanities. While the guards turned their attention on Bridger, Asadi got a foot in the stirrup and swung into the saddle. With the razor wire to his right, he gave a palatal click and slight kick that got Grizz into first gear. Feeling his body unclench with a little distance, Asadi guided his colt to the flat, wide-open plains. In that moment, Butch's words came rushing back. He'd said that horse and rider needed one another. They were partners, and Asadi knew it to be true. A cowboy finds no greater peace than in the saddle, and his horse no greater satisfaction than in harmony with his rider. Asadi had just moved the reins left and begun a lazy counterclockwise turn when he saw Bridger on the ground about 40 yards behind them. A man was kneeling on his back, and another restrained his legs, while a third delivered a kick to the head. Remembering how Butch had put his horse between Kate and her attacker, Asadi spurred his colt toward Bridger in hopes of doing the same. They were only a few yards away when a man with a rifle stepped in between them and aimed. Asadi heard the gunshot, and he was thrown from the saddle as Grizz crashed forward and tumbled end over end in a cloud of dust. Asadi scrambled to his feet and turned to find Grizz in an awful display of violent thrashing. He eased to his wounded colt, careful to avoid the fury of hooves that batted the air.
Easy, boy. Easy. It's okay. Stay still. Please. Just stay.
Grizz calmed a little at the sound of Asadi's voice, then rolled to his stomach, dug his front hooves into the dirt, and launched his haunches off the ground, the way a newborn foal fought to take their very first steps. But halfway up, his body shook. He collapsed forward and again rolled onto his side. Grizz righted himself again and tried to rise, but his front legs buckled and his belly slammed to the ground. With a pitiful whinny, he looked to Asadi with desperate eyes. Spotting the red wound on Grizz's neck, Asadi got down on hands and knees, crawled to the colt, and eased his hand beside the gunshot wound. Grizz's ragged breathing, nose to the ground, made little puffs of dust that caked on his bloody nostrils. Asadi had just risen when he heard quick footsteps approaching. Hoping Bridger had broken loose and was coming to help, he turned to find the man with the rifle. the man who shot Grizz. He had been at the house the day before. It was the silver-haired man, named Holloway. By the time Asadi saw the rifle, it was already too late. Dragged away by a beefy guard, he only heard the faintest of whinnies, two gunshots, a sad silence that told him his partner was gone forever, and there was nothing more he could do to save him. 24. It wasn't hard for Lacey to track down Victoria. The Kaiser family was as close as it gets to royalty in Canadian, and royals can't pick their noses under the covers in the dark without everyone finding out about it the next day. What's more, Victoria's long absence only made the gossip juicier. She was either going to save the Texas Panhandle or bury them all. And given what was happening out at Cole Ranch, Lacey wasn't quite sure of the outcome. As she walked past the white Range Rover she'd seen in front of the bank on Main, Lacey slowed her gait to take in the beautiful grounds of the sprawling Kaiser compound. She couldn't help but think back on all the times that she and her friend, formerly known as Vicky, had sat out on the wraparound porch after cheerleading practice their senior year, talking about colleges, sororities, and the kind of man they wanted to marry one day. One thing was for certain, Lacey had never imagined she'd be standing at the front door, hat in hand for a job, and begging Victoria to intervene on her boyfriend's behalf. As humble pie goes, it was only a slice, but it felt like she was eating the whole damn thing. Spinning on a heel, Lacey decided to abort the whole humiliating mission when her old friend opened the door. Victoria's face registered a look that was somewhere between shock and joy as she embraced Lacey with no less vigor than she had earlier.
What a wonderful surprise.
Once released from her friend's embrace, Lacey took a step back and thumbed over her shoulder to the car.
You know, I really should have called first. You're probably busy.
Don't be silly.
Victoria batted away the notion. Come in. She glanced at Lacey's 10-year-old maroon Ford Explorer with the dented front fender, parked in the driveway.
Just didn't recognize the car. Wasn't until I looked at the security camera that I knew it was you.
Just great. Had Victoria also seen the anxiety on her face and the fear in her eyes, too? Lacey mentally collected herself and worked to match her friend's enthusiasm.
Well, it's me again.
Lacey followed Victoria through the foyer and into the newly redecorated living room that could have easily made the cover of Southern Living.
Where are my manners?
Victoria stopped and turned.
Can I offer you a drink? Nothing for me. I really can't stay long.
Lacey wasn't sure, but she thought her old friend looked a little relieved.
Okay, well, another time then.
Victoria checked her watch, just like she'd done at the bank.
I've got a phone call with the Chicago office coming up anyhow. Oh, well, I'll get right to it then. There are a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about, and the first one is a job. I've applied for an office manager's position with Talon, and I've got all the qualifications.
She dug into her purse, pulled out a resume, and handed it over. Victoria kept her hands at her sides, letting it hang awkwardly in the air.
I don't think so.
Lacey was stunned.
You won't even take a look at it?
Nope.
Victoria gave a quick shake of the head. Still surprised, Lacey wondered if this was because of her divorce with Travis. Could Victoria really be that petty? She was struggling for a response when her old friend smiled.
Lacey, you are like family to me. Your qualifications begin with loyalty, which stands for a hell of a lot more than what's on that paper. Oh, well, that's great news. I was a little worried there for a second.
Now, don't get too excited just yet. It would probably just be on a temporary basis to start. But I know I could sure use an assistant. Would something like that work?
Well, yeah.
Lacey eased the resume back into her purse.
Thank you. No need to thank me.
Victoria's demeanor had changed in a millisecond from sociable to professional. You're a good fit for Talon, and we'd be lucky to have you.
Phew.
Lacey wiped pretend sweat from her brow.
I had a whole speech plan and everything. You won't regret this, I promise.
Victoria's smile looked a little plastic.
I'm sure we won't.
Following an awkward pause, Lacey added,
Just one more thing.
Victoria glanced at her watch again. This time it was purely a signal, a reminder that she was very busy.
Lacey was tempted to take the job and run, but knew the victory would be hollow if she couldn't help Garrett as well.
It's about the Cole Ranch, Victoria. As head of talent acquisitions, I'm sure you have a big say in what happens on that property. And I was wondering if maybe you could...
Let me stop you right there. Victoria's smile vanished. I'm sorry about the Cole situation. I really am. But years ago, a contract was signed, people shook hands, and a sum of money was paid for the rights to those minerals. Because your boyfriend doesn't like it doesn't negate the fact that a deal's a deal.
Okay.
Lacey was struck by how quickly the conversation had turned. Victoria's response was so smooth it almost seemed rehearsed.
Well, if there's anything you can do to at least ease their burden, it would certainly be appreciated.
Victoria's smile returned. Best thing the Coles can do to relieve their burden is obey the law, rather than attack my men who are out there just trying to do their jobs.
Attack them? My understanding is Butch was just trying to protect Kate Shaughnessy from some idiot who tackled her.
I'm not talking about that, Lacey. We fired that idiot driver on the spot. I'm talking about what Garrett and Bridger did out there. The whole family is out of control. Not only was the news to Lacey out of the blue, it was so outrageous that she was tempted to call it a lie. But given what had happened with Butch, she knew better than to protest Victoria's claims just yet.
What are you talking about? What did they do?
I wasn't out there for the incident with Bridger, but I was standing right there when Garrett went berserk. Witness the whole thing.
Witness what, exactly?
What I can only describe as a meltdown. Victoria shook her head, looking confused. He drove out there and attacked our guards, tried to commandeer our machinery.
Garrett? Are you sure?
Lacey couldn't believe what she was hearing.
He's so level-headed. There must have been a reason.
A reason to resort to violence. Victoria scoffed. Two of our workers had to be taken to the emergency room in Pampa.
And Garrett did this?
Ask him yourself. We had to call law enforcement out there and everything. Lacey was in a state of mind that was somewhere between shock and embarrassment. She wanted to argue, but it was impossible without the facts. Naturally, she wondered why Garrett hadn't called. This wasn't like him. Of course, this whole situation had him stirred up. Maybe he'd been pushed too far. With her mind racing, Lacey had almost forgotten that Victoria had made mention of Garrett's brother.
And Bridger? He was there too?
We're still trying to get the full story. Sheriff Crowley came out and took down everything that happened. There were multiple witnesses to the event, but it all had something to do with that little foster child that lives with Butch and Garrett.
Asadi was involved?
Don't know all the details, only that he rode his horse onto the site and started harassing our workers, putting everyone in danger, including himself. According to the incident report, he ran into our perimeter fence. Just know the horse was injured and had to be put down. Lacey's hand flew to her face.
Is Asadi okay?
You mean the boy? Victoria looked a little confused. He's absolutely fine. Not a scratch. Thankfully, our security guards were there to help. He's lucky he wasn't killed.
And Bridger?
Lacey asked. He, on the other hand, was a big problem. We may have to file charges, which could affect his law license. Clearly, Lacey needed to talk to Garrett. Victoria's revelations were more than just embarrassing. They were troubling. She knew that what was going on at the ranch was unfair, if not devastating, but all this was hard to hear. Garrett and his family were tilting at windmills. Their issues and concerns weren't fabricated, but they were certainly delusional if they thought fistfights with a powerful corporation would solve any of their problems. Victoria put her hand on Lacey's shoulder and leaned in.
Look, I hate to sound like a snob, but the Coles... Well, they're of another sort.
Garrett didn't grow up like us.
Of another sort.
If Victoria meant that the Coles were men whose greatest ambition centered on something other than wealth and power, then she supposed they were another breed of men. And she was glad of it. But rather than say all that, Lacey just gave a nod, as solid as her answer.
Yeah, Garrett is different from anyone I've ever met. Guess that's why I fell for him.
As she turned to leave, Victoria tried to stop her, but Lacey kept on the move. Despite her show of defiance, it was hard not to dwell on what had happened at the ranch and why Garrett hadn't told her. It was yet another secret that was driving a wedge between them. 25. Kim took a seat by the window in the CIA cafeteria, a room filled with the low murmur of whispering intelligence officers, no doubt having a few unofficial discussions, just as she was about to do with Contreras. Her query on Talon had turned into a face-to-face, which meant he had found something big. And given the fact that he wanted to meet ASAP, it was likely urgent. Contreras didn't have any more internal access than she did. In fact, he probably had less. But the Special Activities Center paramilitary officer and former Navy SEAL maintained an open line of communications with a tight group of Black Ops veterans, many of whom had gone on to earn the big bucks in defense and security contracting. Those positions, particularly ones in the private sector, opened them up to a whole different network of intelligence sources. Seeing the smile on Contreras' face as he sat, Kim knew immediately that she and Garrett's mutual friend had hit pay dirt.
Take it your boys came through.
Contreras gave a quick look around before opening the folder, even though everything he had was unclassified. It was mostly articles from obscure foreign media publications and blog postings. The one on top was from an environmental group in Burundi, featuring an article about government corruption, missing persons, and a familiar Russian private military company, the infamous Wagner Group. Well beyond what American security firms Blackwater and Triple Canopy were doing in the early Wild West days of Afghanistan and Iraq, Wagner's activities fell fully into the mercenary realm. Operating on Moscow's behalf in places like Europe, the Levant, Maghreb, and sub-Saharan Africa, their tactics in Ukraine and Syria were rumored to include atrocities such as beating their prisoners with sledgehammers and subjecting them to electric shock torture. Kim thumbed through the articles, skimming similar headlines until coming to the last one from a media source in Malawi. There was a photo of three bloated bodies lying in a ditch, surrounded by gawkers from a nearby village. The headline above the picture read, "More dead in wake of mine dispute." Wherever Wagner Group was rumored to be operating, it seemed there was a sudden change in environmental laws and national policy. Contreras tapped his finger on the article.
Buddy from the teams told me Talon hires Wagner for contract security. And for their special jobs, they've got former Spetsnaz operators on the payroll, who can be as discreet or indiscreet as the situation calls for.
Kim stared at the not-so-discreet placement of the dead African men in the ditch, each with a bullet hole center forehead. She wondered how far removed the Russian government was from this, if removed at all.
Nobody's called out Talon for what's going on.
There's no direct ties. No way to link it to Wagner Group or to the company. Just sort of a coincidence. Wagner shows up and clears out any obstacles before Talon arrives to establish high-level government contact and make their deals.
Coincidence, huh?
Kim had to laugh.
Given our history, you'd think we'd be watching this closer.
She couldn't help but be reminded that the race for energy resources was a factor leading up to Pearl Harbor, and hydrocarbons, since then, had been at the forefront of every major conflict in the Middle East. The scarcity of rare earth minerals and large fines could potentially pose the same big problem, particularly given America's heavy reliance on China. Contreras chuckled.
Syria, Iran, North Korea. Those countries make big headlines, not Malawi. Aside from that, we've had a lot on our plate. Taliban, Haqqani Network, ISIS, Hezbollah, Quds Force, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab. Hell, we've still got a damn shadow war going on in Afghanistan, whether our government wants to admit it or not. Rare earth minerals and Talon aren't at the forefront of anyone's mind.
Well, maybe they should be.
Kim looked up from the article.
Particularly if there's a possibility that a company like this is operating over here.
That's Talon Corporation International. Talon Corporation America is a separate entity made up of U.S. citizens entirely. CEO and board of directors are as down-home as apple pie. Despite the similar names, TCI and TCA are separate businesses in no way connected, at least on paper.
Kim's mind raced, thinking about all the things she didn't know about Talon.
Yeah, but something still doesn't add up. I mean, why bother investing here, with all the red tape and environmental regulations, when you can just go to some places in Africa, Latin America, and South Asia, where you can bribe whoever you want, blackmail whoever you want, kill whoever you want, with no repercussions? I don't get it. Why take the chance?
Probably not as hard for them to operate here as you think. Contreras shook his head and laughed. And who says our politicians won't take a bribe?
Kim remembered what Bill had said earlier. Once the campaign contributions and money for pet projects started rolling in, concerns on Capitol Hill tended to disappear. It wasn't officially a bribe, but it wasn't on the up and up. She suspected a few key legislators were all too aware of what Talon was doing overseas and were just hoping no one else would find out.
All right, Mario. This is great stuff. I'll get this to Garrett and see if he can find anything else. We link Talon to Wagner Group or any of these atrocities, and that company's done for.
Contreras gave a nod. Just tell Garrett to give Talon a wide berth. From what I've heard from my sources, these guys aren't too keen on any opposition. Kim pointed to the photo of the dead bodies.
They wouldn't try anything like this over here, do you think?
Contreras shrugged.
I guess the real question is, what are they after down in Texas? And how bad do they want it?
Kim thought a moment.
Don't know. But we've got a guy down there who can find out.
Contreras looked a little anguished, which was rare for someone who, like her, had spent most of his adult life living in war zones and grown accustomed to the dangers.
Just tell Garrett to watch his step.
Suspecting he knew more than he was letting on, Kim pushed.
You know something you're not telling me?
Contreras looked out the window into the cafeteria courtyard, where a few other agency staff were taking their coffee meetings out in the summer sun.
Like you? I've got my off-the-books Rolodex that I keep for special occasions.
Although Kim really wanted to know, she knew better than to ask.
And you think this is one of those occasions?
Contreras turned back to her and smiled.
Don't know. But the fact that Wagner Group could be involved raises some big red flags.
He looked back to the courtyard.
Russians are getting more brazen all the time. If they'll assassinate someone on British soil, then why not here? They're always pushing boundaries, seeing what they can get away with.
Kim couldn't think of a national security angle that would make Moscow risk an international incident with the United States. But over the years, the Russians had used every trick in the book to turn Americans against one another, to tear down the country from within. The logical next step in the process was to capitalize on politicians' greed, completely poison the already polluted well. An operation on American soil wasn't completely out of the question. It was well known that Russian spies were active in the U.S. at any given time. Figuring out who they were and where they were operating was the problem. The CIA and FBI had been trying to figure that out for over a half century. But after the fall of the Berlin Wall, Washington's focus was redirected. Moscow's hadn't. The U.S. was still enemy number one. For Kim to prove Talon was connected to Russian intelligence, particularly given its powerful political ties in America, she'd need indisputable concrete evidence, and she couldn't lay that responsibility entirely on Garrett. She'd have to go down to Texas and find it herself. 26. Garrett could feel the furnace within glowing red hot with fiery billows of seething rage. Butch's call had begun with the words, "Asadi's okay," but the following report of what happened at the ranch sent Garrett on the warpath. Talon guards had murdered Grizz and beat Bridger within an inch of his life. It was the cherry on top after desecrating their mother's grave. Marching down the Hemphill County Hospital hallway toward Bridger's room, Garrett rounded the corner to find Tony Sanchez guarding the door. The sheriff's deputy threw up a hand, palm facing out.
Hold up there, buddy.
When Garrett barged past, Sanchez grabbed his shirt and threw him against the wall.
I said, hold on.
There were only a few men in the world Garrett would have allowed to put their hands on him, and one of them was Sanchez.
Need to see Bridger. Gotta find out what exactly happened out there.
You will, but I want you to calm down first.
Sanchez let go, but kept pressure against Garrett's shoulders.
Okay?
I am. Calm. Garrett gave a nod. Just want to see my brother. That's all.
Sanchez let go and patted Garrett's sleeves back down.
I know that, Quanah. But before you do, I want you to be prepared.
Garrett's heart sank at the thought of what that could mean.
Prepare for what, Tony?
Sanchez grinned, just like he used to when they were kids.
prepared for Bridger to be the ugly brother for once.
The fact that Sanchez could make a joke was a clear message. Bridger was bunged up, but he'd be okay. Garrett untensed and smiled, also to let his friend know he was calming down.
I'm all right now. Really, I am. I just want to check on him and get the full story.
Sanchez let go and took a step back. He looked both ways in the empty hallway and lowered his voice.
What do you know so far?
Just what Daddy told me. Asadi's horse got away, he went to get it, and these guards chased him down, shot that colt and beat up Bridger when he came to help.
Sanchez shook his head and laughed. I'm sure that's exactly how it went down, but that's not the story Talon's telling Sheriff Crowley.
What other way could it be told?
Garrett's temperature was on the rise again. We're the ones with a dead horse and a family member in the hospital, and we're lucky that's the worst of it, given Asadi was riding on top of Grizz when they shot him.
I know, Garrett, but they're saying Asadi was out there harassing them, got too close to the mining operation, and they went after him for his own safety and protection.
Really?
Garrett was almost as furious as he'd been when he saw what they'd done to his mother's grave.
They were so worried about his safety, they shot the horse out from under him.
Given what Butch had done to that truck driver, they said they were afraid they'd be trampled. And because you'd injured two of their guards earlier, they thought Bridger might do the same.
Ah, hell.
Talon was building a case against the entire Cole family. Garrett knew exactly where this was going, but asked anyhow.
So now what?
Now Bridger's kicked off the ranch too, and Asadi.
Garrett crossed his arms.
For how long?
Long as Talon's out there.
You're kidding. That could be months, a year, longer. Hell, this won't stand.
It is standing, Garrett. Judge ordered it less than an hour ago.
What about the cattle and horses?
Sanchez nodded, as if they'd already thought of everything.
Talon agreed to let you on the land with the sheriff's escort, which will, of course, be me. So don't worry. The animals will be well taken care of. You can count on that.
Garrett thought about his friend's words. Talon agreed to let you on the land. In what circle of hell do you need permission from a corporation to set foot on your own damn property, land his family had owned for nearly a century, and his Comanche ancestors before that? Garrett shook his head in disbelief.
The world is upside down, Tony.
Preaching to the choir, man. But here we are. I'll do everything in my power to help, but Crowley has always been thick as thieves with the Kaisers. You know that. And Vicky has him eating out of the palm of her delicate little hand. Sheriff's on Talon's side, not yours.
Garrett stared at the door leading to his brother.
Guess I better tell Bridger the bad news.
It had taken Garrett a minute to get adjusted to his brother's cuts and bruises. The normally dashing Bridger Cole was a swollen mess. On top of an injured kidney, he had two cracked ribs and a broken bone in his right hand. Apparently, he'd landed in a couple of good haymakers before the guards took him down in a rush. Despite the bad news Garrett delivered, Bridger took it all in stride, almost to the point of seeming laid back about it. Nearly to the point of being pissed off at his brother for being so lax, Garrett had to ask,
"Well, what kind of dope they got you on? I need some of that myself."
Bridger smiled a groggy smile.
"I don't know, Bucky, but it's damn good."
"Want to tell me why you're grinning like a guy who didn't just get his ass kicked?"
Bridger grinned wider.
"Just thinking back to our conversation from yesterday. The one where you accused me of defending Talon Corporation and not caring about the land where our mother was buried."
Now that Bridger was lying there beaten and broken, having defended the ranch, and more importantly, Asadi, Garrett felt the sting.
"Look, I told you I was sorry about that. What more can I say?"
"You can say thank you."
Garrett's guilt was giving way to anger again. His brother was pushing it.
"Well, kind of figured it goes without saying, but thank you for what you did. Don't think I gotta tell you this, but Asadi means everything to me, and—"
"Not for that, moron."
Bridger picked up his cell phone lying beside him on the bed and winced as he tossed it over.
"For this."
Garrett caught the phone, stared at it, and looked back at his brother.
"For what?"
Bridger's eyebrows raised in delight.
"Had the camera mounted on my dash. Video rolling the whole damn time."
Garrett pulled up the camera feature and played what it had recorded, which included every agonizing frame of the incident. From the rifle-toting guards chasing Asadi to Tom Holloway shooting Grizz, it also captured the ruthless three-man attack on his unconscious brother. Not a judge in the world could deny that Talon endangered the life of a child, murdered that poor colt, and had beaten Bridger severely and unnecessarily. Garrett looked up to find his brother's swollen face in a full smile.
Damn, Bridger. If I'd have known whooping your ass would save the day, I'd have been whooping it for years.
Think we need to set up another meeting with Holloway. This one on our terms. They can get their asses off our property, or we send that video to every news outlet in the country.
Garrett nodded, feeling positive for the first time in a while.
That'll get us broad public support, but we'll need buy-in from locals, the ones losing money. We need photos of the damage to the ranch, proof that they're wasting water. We need to show all of it to make our case that what happened today wasn't just an isolated incident. We've got to show that Talon's image as savior of our community is all just a farce. They're destroying it.
The only thing worse than trenching through the gravesite of a beloved local hero nurse was wasting water and bulldozing a grove of full-grown trees. In a land once known as the Great American Desert, that was a sin of the blackest sort. For all the stereotypes of environmentally dispassionate Texans, the ones who called the High Plains home could hug a tree with the best of them. To drive the final nail in Talon's coffin, Garrett needed visual proof of the wanton destruction taking place on the ranch, proof of the company's hypocrisy. But as persona non grata on his own property, he was going to need help. And the one to do it was the man who'd done all the damage in the first place. It was time to pay a visit to Ray Smitty.
27.
Smitty knew it was bad when Garrett wanted to meet in person. In the run-up to the operation to capture Emilio Garza, they'd had plenty of back-road secret meetings, never once discussing those details over the phone. Smitty had no idea who could possibly be listening, only that the DEA special agent took operational security damn seriously. Of course, this meeting had nothing to do with the cartel and everything to do with his dozer work on the ranch. They had met at this location a few times before, a dried-out old frack pit about a mile or so off the highway. Garrett claimed it was halfway between the two of them, but it sure didn't feel that way. He'd have argued, but Smitty was in enough hot water already. Smitty glanced over at Savannah, who was sitting beside him in the truck, opened the door and hopped out. Turning back to his daughter, he ginned up a big smile.
Just got to talk a little business with a friend of mine. Back in a jiffy.
Savannah looked skeptical about the whole deal, but she didn't argue. It had been a blessing to have her along for the ride. Garrett might be pissed off at him, but he wouldn't hit a man with his kid there watching. At least, Smitty sure as hell hoped not.
Well, hello there, Garrett. I was hoping we'd get a chance to talk.
Garrett didn't look amused as he jumped out of the big black GMC and marched toward Smitty. In fact, he looked like he was ready to punch someone, even if a kid was watching. Stopping dead in his tracks, Smitty cringed in anticipation of a beating. But when no fists came flying, he opened his eyes to find Garrett neither mad nor happy, just somewhere in between.
I'm not going to hit you, Ray. I know you were just following orders.
Smitty sighed.
Look, I'm really sorry about all that. They just told me to knock down them trees. I didn't know nothing about your mama's grave. Because you gotta believe—
Oh, I know. Garrett pushed the air. Even you wouldn't sink that low.
The old Smitty might have bristled, but the new one took the insult on the chin.
Better that than a fist. It was an honest mistake, Garrett. Really. Nobody knew nothing about it.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. Talon is in such a hurry to dig that they didn't bother to ask us those kinds of questions. All this could have been avoided.
For what it's worth, we fenced off that area now. Saw to it myself. Nobody's gonna get to her resting place now, I promise.
Resting place? What kind of place is that to rest?
Garrett shook his head.
And how are we supposed to visit her if it's barricaded? Not a day's gone by that my dad hasn't been out there since the day she was buried. That old man may have the temperament of a badger, but he's loyal as a Labrador. He won't be kept out of there for long.
I don't know what to say.
Smitty felt low, even if he wasn't entirely to blame for what happened.
What can be done about it now?
What can be done is the mining operation can be moved and the land restored. That's what can be done. But I need your help to do it.
My help?
Smitty's pulse raced.
They won't listen to me. I ain't nothing but a hand to them folks. They'll cut me loose for even mentioning it. Made that clear right after it happened.
Look, I don't need you to talk to them or anyone else. I just want some good pictures of the damage to the gravesite and the trees you knocked down. Maybe get a look at my water wells. See how much they're pumping out.
If I do that, Garrett, they'll drop me like a hot tater. Photos get out and I'll get the blame. I can't lose this job.
I don't want you to lose your job. I don't want anyone to lose their jobs, but Talon's up to no good, and I've got to prove that. A beat passed as Smitty thought on the words up to no good. Ever since he got shoved against the wall in the back office, he'd suspected the same. He started to say that, but held back. More important than Garrett's request was Crystal's latest threat. Don't screw this up, or else. You know something, Ray. Garrett's eyes bore into him. What is it? Smitty had been involved in enough shady dealings over the course of his life to know when one was going down.
Well, maybe I saw something. I don't know.
Garrett took a couple of steps forward. His face was less angry now and more pleading. Look, it's not just about the land anymore. They came after Asadi, beat up Bridger and killed one of our horses. These people are out of control and need to be dealt with. Killed a damn horse? Growing up, his foster family kept a couple of swayback pasture ornaments around. The old mares were about two steps away from glue, but that never bothered him. When he had no friends, the horses had been there. They were the only bright stars in a childhood of heartache and abandonment. Smitty knew that if he lost his new job, Crystal would kill him. But he also knew that this was an opportunity to make things right. He didn't know if you could buy your soul back from the devil, but if there was ever a goal worth the effort, skirting perdition was at the top of the list. Smitty leaned in close, so Savannah couldn't hear him since the window was down.
Garrett, I think you're right. Not everything with Talon is on the up and up.
Okay. Garrett gave a nod and lowered his own voice, too. What's going on?
No idea, but they've got some secrets, that's for sure.
Smitty gave a quick glance at Savannah, who was still staring daggers at him.
Whatever they're doing, it's being kept in their main office on the ranch. I saw it the morning I first got there.
Garrett perked up. Saw what exactly?
Smitty shrugged. Don't know. Something. A bunch of maps and papers. Just know they didn't want me seeing what they got there. That's for sure.
Garrett seemed to think hard on it. Can you take a trip out there with me? Show me where you saw it go down. Relieved he had an excuse to turn Garrett down, Smitty glanced back at Savannah.
Well, I'd like to help, but I've got my daughter to look after while her mama's at work, and have to be out at the dig site early in the morning. So, unfortunately, no can do, amigo.
Garrett leaned left, peered around Smitty, and stared at Savannah. That's no problem, Ray. I can help you out with your little girl. Smitty didn't like the slow smile that crept up on Garrett's face. It was the same one as when he'd told him about his pipeline ruse and Emilio Garza, the same one that nearly got him killed. And it was the very same one that just might lead to Talon completing the job that the Guatemalan mercenaries never got to finish. 28. Asadi sat across from Savannah Smitty at Bridger's dining room table, eating pizza, drinking Dr. Pepper, and wondering what on earth he was supposed to say. The girl didn't look happy, not one bit. But Garrett had told him she was just a little shy and would warm up to him once they found something in common. Apparently, junk food wasn't it. Savannah had plopped down a sleeping bag and a ratty old stuffed teddy bear by the door when she first walked inside. They were the same items the twins brought with them for sleepovers out at the ranch, which gave Asadi good reason to be concerned. He wasn't the best at making friends because of his broken English. There was always an awkward pause in his answers, and he usually said something wrong. While Garrett's and Savannah's fathers were taking care of some business, which Asadi had learned over the past few months was code for not going to get the truth, he pondered what they were up to, assuming it had something to do with what happened at the ranch. Truth be told, Asadi had hoped for a little time alone. He had shed quite a few tears over the loss of his colt, his partner, a reaction Garrett and Butch assured him was quite okay. Asadi knew that his family would think no less of him for crying, but he also knew the value they placed on toughness. And he wanted so much to prove his emotional strength. More importantly, he wanted to prove it to their surprise visitor with the blue eyes and curly brown hair. Savannah seemed not to care what others thought, a trait that Asadi really admired. He, however, always worried about the opinion of others, mostly Garrett and Butch, which usually had something to do with training horses or chores on the ranch. But sometimes Bridger's daughters, Sophie and Chloe, were the culprits. The twins had been kind and caring, treating him like a little brother. They'd even worked hard to make sure he was cool, keeping him fashionable and teaching him all the right things to do and say. Asadi had made tremendous strides since moving to Texas, but he still had a long way to go. Middle school was only 2 weeks away, and there was much to learn. With Sophie and Chloe moving on to high school, he was starting to panic about who would he sit with at lunch, and what would he wear on the first day. The twins assured him both were a really big deal, but the seating arrangement was the most important. "Your entire future," they'd said, "depends on the table where you sit." Asadi couldn't imagine how that was possible, but took their words to heart. The girls were his guardian angels and had been since the moment they met. They'd yet to steer him wrong. While Savannah wasn't too friendly, she sure was pretty. Real pretty. She was maybe even as beautiful as the twins, and that was saying a lot. Ray's daughter had yet to communicate, unless you counted sighs and eye rolls, which were getting more frequent by the moment. Thankfully, Butch ambled over from the living room to check on them and break the awkward silence. Butch looked down at Savannah's half-eaten slice.
"I've seen boll weevils make a bigger dent than that. Not a pizza fan, huh?"
Savannah stared at it, too. "It'll do, I guess." Butch shrugged.
"Well, I got you, cheese. Figured every kid likes a cheese."
She mumbled under her breath.
"I'll have to keep on figuring, old man."
Butch wore the same confused look he did whenever he had a conversation with their neighbor, Kate.
"All right, then."
He turned to Asadi, looking defeated.
"With Bridger in his condition and the girls still on the way back from Corpus, I reckon he'd be mighty grateful if you helped out with some of Sophie and Chloe's chores. Think you could manage that?"
Thank God. Never happier to take his leave, Asadi donned his cowboy hat, popped up from the table, and bolted for the door. He was almost home free when Butch cleared his throat.
"You forget something, Sonny?"
Asadi stopped and turned slowly, thinking how close he'd been to escaping Savannah's silent wrath. He didn't say anything back, just shook his head vigorously and looked to Savannah, who was no longer staring dead-eyed at the pizza, but glaring at him. Asadi mustered up his kindest smile.
"You want go with me? Feed steers?"
A couple of seconds passed while Savannah stared him down, then she tossed her slice on the plate and rose.
"Why not? Curious to see if they eat any better than this."
As she marched to the door, Asadi glanced up at Butch, who just scratched his head and shuffled back to the living room. His favorite hunting show, Bone Collector, was paused on the screen of the 65-inch television mounted to the wall. Asadi crossed the yard out to the barn out back with Savannah in tow. The twins' hungry Angus show steers, Booger and Swole, were already waiting by the fence. Savannah stepped up to the behemoth bovines and took turns scratching each on the nose. The fact that she at least liked animals gave Asadi hope. He walked up beside her and greeted them himself. Asadi turned to her as she scratched Swole's big forehead.
"You have animal too?"
It took her a second to answer.
"Not like this."
She cut her eyes at him.
"I mean, we've got dogs where I live. But most you don't touch unless you got a whoop up on him or something."
He stared at her curiously.
"Why you want whoop up on dog?"
Savannah seemed a bit defensive.
"It's not that I want to, necessarily. It's just some of the dogs where we live are a bit mangy."
"Mangy?" Asadi asked.
"You know, nasty,"
Savannah clarified.
"And they'll try to jump in the car and get at your food when you ain't looking."
She seemed lost in the moment.
"I mean, I don't really mind it too bad. Kinda like their company when I go down to the river, cause there ain't really no other kids around. But Mama's got a big issue with them eating out of the garbage."
Asadi looked at her in disgust.
"The kids? They eat the garbage?"
For the first time, Savannah let out a chuckle.
No, silly. I'm talking about the dogs. One choked on a wine cork once and barfed it up on the couch.
Asadi's growing disgust must have registered in an even bigger way. She playfully whacked his arm.
Oh, it's not that bad. It cleaned right up the next day.
Wanting to change the subject, Asadi brought the conversation back to the steers.
No got pets like these.
She registered her own look of disgust.
Daddy says showing livestock is rich man's game. Says it's all rigged. Rich get richer and all that.
Asadi didn't know if that was true, but he did know there was a lot of money involved. He remembered hearing that the grand champion steer from a show in Houston had once brought in well over $500,000. Knowing what could be made, he was tempted to give it a try. But Garrett had not been supportive either. At least he and Savannah had that in common. Saying without really thinking, Asadi announced,
I like the horses best.
Her face brightened again.
Got any we can saddle up?
On a roll now, Asadi kept it going.
Horses out at ranch. We got best. Quarter horses.
He pronounced the word quarter slowly to make sure she understood the distinction.
I know what quarter horses are,
Savannah shot back.
I'm not an idiot. They the best,
he said again proudly. Asadi didn't really know if that was true, but he'd heard Butch say it so many times that he'd come to believe it. Savannah's demeanor softened.
Daddy says when we move out to the country, we can get some horses too.
She looked embarrassed.
Maybe not the best, but at least ones we can ride.
Asadi felt a little bad that he'd made that comment, not wanting her to think he was boasting, or even worse, feel bad because she couldn't afford them. He would have tried to fix it, but his English was not quite good enough yet, and would probably make it worse. Time for another subject change.
You go to school?
Wrong subject. Asadi got the eye roll again.
Unfortunately,
was all she said.
You'll not like?
Oh, just wait. You'll see.
Savannah turned to him, looking a little sad.
Some of the kids are all right, but then you got the ones who'll make fun of you.
Make fun?
Asadi couldn't believe what he was hearing. The twins' friends had all been so kind and welcoming.
Why make fun?
All sorts of reasons. The way you dress, way you talk, you name it. They'll find something wrong. You can count on that.
Asadi's heart sank. He had been worried about wearing the right thing, but knew Sophie and Chloe could help him. The way he talked was another matter. He had not even thought about that problem. If a girl as pretty as Savannah could get made fun of, there was little hope for him. Plus, she dressed so cool. Since she walked through the front door, he'd been jealous of her t-shirt with the hilarious cartoon worm sporting the droopy mustache and sombrero. Before he could ask where she got it, Savannah had already moved on.
Well, these big some bitches look hungry.
She gave Booger a scratch on the nose.
We're supposed to pour some feed, ain't we?
Thankful for the reminder, Asadi smiled. Although her warnings about school made him nervous, he valued the advice. If the way you talk was that big of a deal, he'd have to work extra hard. From here on, he'd pay close attention to everything Savannah said, and more importantly, the way she said it. With only a couple of weeks left, he had to make every moment count. 29. Garrett lay prone, and what was once beautiful prairie grassland now churned into upturned soil, a place he no longer recognized, like some Hollywood set for a movie about World War I. Even if he could get this no man's land back from Talon, restoring the ranch back to its original beauty would take an act of God. Gazing beyond the razor wire barricade around the mining operation, Garrett monitored the grounds to make sure they were alone. The West Texas sun was taking its sweet time dipping below the horizon, so long that Smitty dozed off and was starting to snore. With the nightfall darkness providing just enough cover for their mission, Garrett roused his partner with a nudge.
Get up, Ray. Time to go.
Garrett felt Smitty shudder as he came back to life.
For someone who fought the idea of sneaking in here tooth and nail, you seem awfully at ease. Anybody this comfortable snoozing before a B&E is too damn lax for their own good.
I ain't comfortable or lax, Smitty argued. I get too still for too long and just fall right to sleep. Doctor says I got the heart rate of a possum. It's a medical condition, you know.
Garrett studied Smitty, who didn't appear to be joking.
Possum heart, huh?
A pause and a chuckle.
Yeah, I think I read about that in a medical journal somewhere.
Garrett grabbed Smitty by the sleeve, yanked him up, and sprinted toward the fence. He checked to confirm his partner was behind him, then hit the gap beneath the razor wire, careful to suck in and make himself as small as possible. Smitty was no less cautious, easing underneath it in slow motion, a careful eye on the bladed coils above. Once inside the perimeter, Garrett surveyed the Talon compound, which included a half dozen double-wide mobile offices about 40 yards ahead. Heavy machinery and fleet vehicles were parked in neat rows around the back. But for the glow of halogens in the Caliche parking lot, there was little light other than what was provided by the stars. Garrett turned to Smitty, who had just crawled up beside him.
Which trailer has the documents and maps?
Smitty pointed to the second one on the left.
That one. Back office. Why?
Think I'm going to need to see what these guys are hiding.
Smitty let loose a string of profanities under his breath.
Why? You already got the video Bridger took, and we can read the meters on the wells to see how much water they're wasting. Between all that and photos of the busted up gravesite, that should be all you need.
That's just bad publicity. It'll only slow them down. To get their asses off this place for good, I'll need something better. Something illegal.
What if it's nothing and we get caught?
Garrett thought for a moment. Smitty was prone to exaggeration, but something was off about Talon. Something big. If there was hard evidence that could take them down, then it was worth the risk. He pulled his wrist to his face and checked the glowing hands on his watch.
Look, Ray. We'll be in and out of there in 5 minutes.
What do you need me for?
You saw where they put the maps, right?
Smitty looked like he was going to be sick.
Yeah, so what?
And I won't waste a bunch of time looking all over the place.
Garrett pointed ahead.
Nobody's even here. It'll be quiet until morning.
Smitty rose and studied the grounds.
In and out? You promise?
Garrett jumped up, grabbed Smitty by the sleeve, and dragged him along in a sprint to the portable office. At the side of the building, he threw his back against the wall and eased to the corner. He peered around, saw no one, and dashed to the front door. The quiet of the night was only shattered by two gravelly barks from Smitty, battling it out with his smoker's cough. Garrett slipped on a pair of leather work gloves and tried the front door. Finding it locked, as suspected, he pulled the stowed rubber mallet from his Mystery Ranch backpack, raised the tool, and brought it down with a jab. It was so swift that half the doorknob busted off with a ping and shot across the deck. Garrett turned the hammer around, jammed the handle in the hole, and gave it a pop. The rest of the apparatus ejected from the back and banged on the floor inside.
Why'd you do that?
Smitty grimaced.
Now they'll know we've been here for sure.
That was true, but Garrett didn't care. If they found something good, it wouldn't matter anyhow. Talon would have a hell of a lot bigger fish to fry. Garrett stepped inside and kicked the other half of the doorknob out of the way. With Smitty behind him, he pulled the door shut and clicked on a red lens flashlight. Smitty took the lead, moved to the back office door, and used his sleeve to cover his hand before giving the knob a try. He'd barely gotten a verdict when Garrett whacked it with the mallet and followed up with a front kick that crashed the door inward. Smitty made a beeline to a cabinet at the back of the room. Garrett handed off the flashlight, reached to his belt, and unsheathed the Moremaker tactical clip point knife from its nylon scabbard. A quick flip of the blade downward and he jammed it into the space between the cabinet door and the opening. A couple sharp taps to the handle and the lock popped open. Smitty shook his head.
And you call me a criminal?
Garrett took off his pack, opened it wide, and shoved every document he could from the cabinet into it. There were files, maps, and spreadsheets. Nothing that looked incriminating as far as the eye could tell, but there was no time to study it. He had just gotten the last file into his bag when headlights flashed across the wall. Ducking as he moved to the front window, Garrett peered over the window's edge to find a white SUV and a Talon pickup swinging into parking spots right out front of the trailer. A near-paralyzed Smitty asked in a voice just above a whisper,
"Now what?"
Good question. At the sound of slamming vehicle doors, Garrett moved across the room, keeping his head low until he reached the back window. Gliding up with his shoulder to the wall, he flicked the latch open and slid the pane up at a painfully slow pace. Turning back to the front window,
Garrett watched as four silhouettes crossed the parking lot, heading to the front door. He swore he heard a woman's voice among them. Smitty hopped onto the windowsill, hung over the side, and dropped to the ground with a louder thud than Garrett liked. But given the rising voices and fast beat of footsteps down the hall, the jig was up anyhow. Garrett ducked under the window and hurled himself outside. Landing with his own clunk, he scrambled to his feet and sprinted after Smitty, who was already nearing the fence. With angry shouting and heavy footsteps close behind, Garrett turned on the afterburners, legs pumping like pistons, as he fought to catch up. With his pursuers bearing down on him, he lost sight of Smitty, who dove in and burrowed through to the other side. Garrett slowed his speed with the glinting razor wire only 10 yards ahead. He had just slowed his pace when the supersonic snap of a bullet zoomed overhead. A closer second set him ducking, and a third headfirst into the hole. Halfway into the burrow, a burst of light filled the tiny cave, and a crack, crack, crack of pistol fire from behind. With freedom in sight, Garrett's spirits rose until his pants leg caught. He kicked like a mule and dug in his elbows, but the freshly churned soil gave him no traction. His hopes were nearly dashed until Smitty's bony hand reached down and clutched onto his sleeve. Another jerking yank came from behind, but Garrett's partner in crime held on tight. With a solid back kick as Smitty yanked, the tug of war was over, and Garrett broke free. He lunged, scrabbled to his feet, and tore after Smitty, who was a good 20 yards ahead. Jogging back to his truck on the backside of the ranch, Garrett didn't worry about getting caught, or even gunfire that echoed from behind. He was worried what would happen if his gamble didn't pay off. Whatever he'd stuffed into his bag better amount to something huge. If not, he had just gotten himself into a hell of a lot more trouble than he was already in. Part 3. If you're scared of wolves, don't go into the woods. Russian proverb. 30. Smitty sat in the passenger seat of Garrett's GMC Sierra, staring out into the nighttime nothingness of the flat, rolling plains. He couldn't help but wonder how he kept managing to heap one bad decision on top of another. Thinking back on it now, part of him wished he would have died down in Mexico, or at least pretended he'd died. Things were about to get real bad for him and his family. Garrett jammed the accelerator as they peeled off the county road and launched onto the highway back to Canadian. "You're awfully quiet," he glanced over. "What's going on?" Smitty let out a sigh.
"What's going on is that I'm going to lose this job at minimum and maybe go back to jail."
"Not gonna happen, Ray. They didn't see you. If anyone should be worried, it's me." Smitty turned from the window to Garrett.
"Well, are you?"
"Nope." Garrett shook it off. "Not at all. Long as we got something we can use, we're in the clear." He quickly corrected himself. "I'm in the clear. They don't even know we're acquainted. You're safe, man. Trust me." Smitty wasn't buying it. He could see the worry etched on Garrett's face.
"I can't mess this up, or it'll be the last straw with Crystal. I'm gonna lose my family and a whole lot worse."
"Nothing's messed up, I promise. Just show up tomorrow like always, and nobody will be the wiser."
Garrett turned to Smitty, clearly to drive home the point.
"But if you miss work, someone's going to come looking for you, and they'll have lots of questions. Understand?"
Smitty nodded, even though Garrett had already turned back to the road. He was to the point of not caring whether he lived or died. Crystal had put up with enough of his mistakes, and he doubted she'd put up with any more. Garrett's optimism wasn't buying him any more chances. Smitty patted the pack full of documents.
"What are you going to do with this?"
"After I drop you off, I'm going over to the hospital to meet with Bridger."
"Visiting hours are over,"
Smitty countered. "They're going to have to make an exception. My guess is that even if Talon can't prove who broke into their office, they'll point the sheriff in my direction. That means if we're going to find something, it had better be fast."
"And you think Bridger will figure it out?"
Garrett gave a nod. "He's pretty much a mineral rights expert on top of being a lawyer. If anybody can find a way to shut down Talon, it'll be him." Realizing what this could mean, Smitty turned and asked with venom,
"So you don't just want to shut down the operation on your place, you want the whole damn company down?"
When Garrett didn't answer immediately, Smitty filled the void.
Why did I even help you then? Whole time I was just putting myself out of a job.
It's not that bad, Ray. There's plenty of jobs out there.
Not for a guy like me, there ain't.
Smitty let out another sigh.
Man, this was going to get us out of that RV park and on a piece of land of our own. That was the dream.
A few seconds passed until Garrett finally spoke.
Yeah, I guess I didn't think about all that.
He turned again to Smitty, looking genuinely concerned.
If this Talon deal falls through, you and your family will be taken care of. I promise I'll help you find something.
Suddenly, Smitty felt a sense of relief. A family like the Coles vouching for you meant something, even for a guy like him.
Oh, yeah? Like what?
Garrett looked a bit hesitant.
Well, with Asadi heading to school in a few weeks and me going back to the DEA field office in Amarillo, we're going to need some help on the ranch. If you can drive a dozer, I'm assuming you can drive a tractor.
Better believe it.